The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Well, there was an upset here in Boise, but it wasn't the one that was expected. A lot of people had pegged Davidson to knock off Kentucky. The Wildcats held Davidson at bay and advanced. But then in the final game of the night at Taco Bell Arena, Buffalo shocked the four-seed Arizona. And so it is Buffalo and Kentucky in the matchup to go to the Sweet 16. That'll be at 5:15 Eastern time tomorrow here in Idaho. Hello, everybody. Welcome in to our Friday edition of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. And we will be talking about the Cats' win, a little bit about the matchup with Buffalo as we move through the course of the hour, and obviously a little bit about the first day of the tournament. Mike DeCourcy will join us. We'll get his take on the Cats and the matchup and what happened to Arizona and everything else to do with day one of this tournament. A little bit of a look ahead to day two. It's a good day for the SEC, 4-0 yesterday. And John Hood, former Wildcat, will join us. He was on Coach Cal's first Final Four team here at Kentucky back in 2011. And we will also check in with Darren Hedrick, talking about the Kentucky baseball team starting Southeastern Conference play today. That's our guest lineup. It's presented each day by Sleep Outfitters here on the Leach Report. You can interact with us via Twitter at Leach Report. Email, it is leachreport@gmail.com. Or you can call 877-904-1080. Toll free anywhere in the great state of Kentucky. Wildcat News of the Day is a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander and Kevin Knox were tremendous down the stretch for Kentucky after the Wildcats saw a 10-point lead shrink away. Davidson tied the game twice after the midway point of the second half, the last time at 54, and it was Gilgeous-Alexander and Knox that scored all but, I think, two of the points down the stretch for Kentucky. And they hit some big shots. Shea had a couple of huge steals when Kentucky looked like might fall behind for the first time since the early moments of the game. And they were able to never lose the lead despite Davidson's comeback in the second half and the incredible shooting display that John Axel Goodmanson put on in the second half. Three straight games with 50% shooting or better for Kentucky. First time that happened since the middle of January last year. However, the three-point streak ended. Kentucky was 0 for 6 on threes, so after 1,047 games, Kentucky no longer has the nation's longest streak of making at least one three in a game. Streak that stretched back to a game against Seton Hall in the Great Alaska Shootout in November of 1988. So almost a full 40 years, or 30 years for that streak. 26 minutes of NCAA tournament experience coming into this for Kentucky, all represented by Winyon Gabriel, and he had just 1 point in those games, so he still hasn't made a shot in an NCAA tournament game. He made a field goal, and that's probably had something to do with what Kentucky was experiencing. Cal thought they were a little, I think he called it feet in cement. I think this level of experience is probably less than they had in 2014, and I remember that team's first game was nothing special. They got past Kansas State, but then in the second game, they upset Wichita State, as you all remember, and it was a much sharper Kentucky performance. So we'll see if that same thing happens with one game under their belt when Kentucky and Buffalo play tomorrow. They better, because Buffalo looked really good. Shannon, producing, back in the studio. Jump on the mic there for a second, Shannon.
Yes, sir.
Doing the KSR show. You were touting Buffalo, and they were scoffing at you.
They were. They were laughing in my face. But who's laughing today? Because
You said you watched Buffalo play.
Yeah. They were trying to say, well, you haven't seen Buffalo play. Well, how do you know about Buffalo? I just sat down and watched them one day play, and I'm sitting here thinking, you know, if this team plays as well as they were playing at the game I was watching them, this is a team that can make a run in March. And sure enough, they did last night at least.
And they're a team that makes, that shoots it well. They made 15 out of 33s last night. And, you know, when you that's the kind of team that, you know, one of those mid-major teams that usually does something. And that's what the script looks like in March. They hit a bunch of threes. And Mike Pratt and I were watching the game last night, and I said that at times it looked like there were eight guys on the court for Buffalo. They were just swarming Arizona.
Yeah. And I wonder, too, if, I mean, maybe this doesn't have anything to do with it, but is there a little bit of distraction from the investigation that's going on with Arizona as well?
And I, Could be.
Yeah. So I kind of felt like that
they,
may have.
They look like, well, I saw Seth Greenberg on ESPN earlier today saying it looked like they didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
And they were certainly getting beat to every long rebound, loose ball, and they got spanked. Buffalo, by the way, played a tough schedule. They went to Arizona, went to Syracuse and played. They went to Texas A&M and played. They played Cincinnati on a neutral court. All games that they lost, but they prepared themselves for a moment like this. They average 85 points a game. That's seventh best in the nation. They average 10 threes a game. A couple of other quick things at the Sweet 16 at Rupp Arena. It's quarterfinal day, starting with Scott County and Corbin at noon. Kiki Tandy. I had 31 yesterday for University Heights and a loss to Campbell County. He's the player from Hopkinsville that Kentucky is looking at. UK baseball opening up at Arkansas, start SEC play. And Tom Crean hired at Georgia. Kermit Davis, the new coach at Ole Miss. Links to the stories that we talk about can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. Got to get to a break. John Hood, when we come back, it's the Leach Report from Boise, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
You're tuned to Talk Radio 1080 and The Leach Report. And visit TomLeachKY.com for more news and views on the Cats.
Welcome back into The Leach Report from Boise, where the Wildcats have a practice day, a bit of a, not really, can't call it an off day, but it is at least a day without a game to recover a little bit before they take on Buffalo in what should be a very fast-paced game tomorrow. One of our listeners, John, says this feels much like the 2010 season where the bracket opened up wide and it took a freak game by West Virginia to derail UK. He says he senses a Kentucky-Tennessee Elite Eight coming. I've always said this reminds me more of the 2011 season, and John Hood was on that team, John Calipari's first team that made it to a Final Four, and he joins us now here on the Leach Report. And, Hoodie, the reason I've always said that is that it was a team that took a took Cal a longer time to find out the best way for you guys to play and the best way to make the pieces fit together. And it was the same way with this group this year. But they have certainly started to click here in the latter stages of the season. What are you seeing?
Well, I've been impressed the last couple games, especially the SEC tournament really, really impressed me by the way that they locked down defensively. Last night, into the game, I could have been more pleased with it. At some points, it seemed like we were playing with a lead, but still trying to extend the game almost. But this is the NCAA tournament. You have to get past that first game. The first game is always going to be the hardest one to win.
Cal talked after the game that he thought maybe that got to him a little bit. When you have freshmen, they have to. You can talk to them about things, but they have to actually experience it. And you know, this team didn't have any veterans to lean on. Wenyan's the only guy that played in any games, and they didn't play much, so that made it even tougher, I think, for that first NCAA game, right?
Yes, of course, and especially traveling all the way out to Boise, and you know as well as I do, playing a inferior opponent like they did last night, that entire arena is going to be cheering for the inferior opponent like they did with Davidson last night. So you're essentially playing a road game in the SEC, NCAA tournament, sorry.
And they're going to face that same situation on Saturday because the crowd will go for Buffalo. And it's a late-arriving crowd, but it did eventually fill up last night, so it's a lot of local support that guys, folks that don't have any particular allegiance, and so they'll go for Buffalo in this matchup with Kentucky because Buffalo will be the underdog, doesn't have the big name. And, you know, for the Kentucky guys, talk a little bit about, you know, as a player, you know, you look at the bracket and you – you know, hear all the discussion and the pundits, and everybody was talking about Kentucky-Arizona, and that was going to be the marquee matchup of the Saturday schedule in the NCAA tournament. Well, that's not the matchup we're getting, and so how do you have to change your mindset, or is that an issue at all?
Well, these guys cannot look over and look past this Buffalo team. They are very good, and they have a very good guard in Clark, and he will score in bunches like he did last night. He'll go on a stretch where against Arizona last night, he had six straight, and he'd go a couple minutes, he'll have five straight, and you can't leave them open. You can't get lost on screens off the ball, can't go under on screens on the ball. It's a tough matchup, but as a player, you see who is in your pod, and Cal talks about it, that you have to win your pod. If you win your pod, you get to move on, and then you win that pod. And as long as you win three pods, you've won the national title. But the first one, when you have teams from other areas playing in your city that you're in, that makes it harder. It gets kind of more distracting, I feel like.
What's Cal like at this time of year versus the rest of the season, if it's at all different?
He's a machine. He's a machine this time of year. The assistants are machines this time of year. They're most of the time going on little to no sleep. He has the intensity ratcheted up to, I know it sounds weird, but 100 ticks higher than what he normally does. And Cal's a very intense guy. It's just everything that you do is under a microscope right now. And during that practice today, if they don't do something the right way, they're going to do it until they get it right.
Yeah, I saw that. I was watching the practice day before yesterday, and there was one drill that they were doing, and it was a player that, it's a drill where they were driving down the lane and getting bumped by the pads that the managers are holding, just playing right through contact, and a guy kind of nonchalanted the layup a little bit and missed it, and Cal stopped, came in, and said, "No, go back and do it again." I think that's what you're talking about.
That is exactly what I would expect.
Clark for Buffalo was great last night, 25 points. Let's see, he would have played against you, right, you guys? You remember him?
When he was at Missouri?
Yes.
He would, but I don't remember him. Now, granted, I don't remember playing Missouri much.
Yeah, he had his best game the year after you finished, I think. He had, I think he played in games that against the teams that you were on, but I don't think that I think he had his best game the year after you finished up.
Right. The guys from Missouri I remember are Jordan Clarkson and Jabari Brown and that group.
What about the matchup with Buffalo concerns you from the Kentucky standpoint?
Well, the fact that they're a 13 seed kind of concerns me. You saw at times that last night where the Cats seemed to overlook Davidson and kind of nonchalant. Oh, they're a 12 seed. They can't beat us, or at least that's what it looked like to me. And the low effort plays at times, and it just kind of seemed like they thought they deserved to win. In my mind. That cannot happen against this Buffalo team because they will beat us. Davidson was good enough to beat us last night. They just couldn't hit shots down the stretch.
Yes, and this will be a different kind of challenge. Davidson was passing, cutting. This will be more of kind of what they're used to seeing with pick and roll guards trying to get downhill and kick it out to the wings. And this is a team that had some issues defending guys off the bounce earlier this year. They've gotten better at it, but that's going to be tested, isn't it?
Yes, this is more like what you'll see in an SEC conference game. Late clock, they may bring everyone but Clark is going to pull a high ball screen up there, late shot clock. Clark is just going to just try to beat you one-on-one.
John Hood, thank you much for the time. Enjoy the games, and we will talk again if this keeps rolling.
Thank you.
That is John Hood from Madisonville, Kentucky, and former Kentucky player from the start of the Cal era. So he saw some good days in his time here, and hopefully some coming for this particular group of Wildcats. 24 after the top of the hour. Quick break, and back to talk a little baseball on the Leach Report Radio Network, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
Look for the Leach Report on Facebook. Show updates, contests, and other cool stuff. Check it out today.
Darren Hendrick joins the show as the Kentucky baseball team heads out to Arkansas to open Southeastern Conference play. Darren, tell us about this matchup.
Tom, this is going to be a great series this weekend against two top five teams. Kentucky's number four entering the series. Arkansas is right behind them at number five. And you look at tonight's matchup especially, the runs are going to be at a premium between Sean Jelly for Kentucky and junior Blaine Knight for Arkansas. He's a right-hander. Four starts, a .78 ERA. These two pitchers are combined 7-0, and I think they've combined for about 49 innings this year, and have only allowed six earned runs. So tonight's going to be a really interesting matchup and a big challenge for Kentucky on the road.
This is a conference that is always loaded, but give us the picture of, obviously, Kentucky's a major contender. What's it look like at the top of this league heading into league play?
Well, like you mentioned, it's really loaded this year. Florida's number one in the league right now. In fact, they were number one in the land at one point. And then you've got Kentucky, Arkansas's up there. Ole Miss has been ranked in the top 10. Auburn has been a big surprise. They've got a Friday night starter, Casey Mize, that's already thrown a no-hitter against Northeastern. LSU is not at the level that they have been, but still a dangerous team. Mississippi State is a really solid ball club, even though they've gone through some adversity this year. So I think at one point at the start of the college baseball season, there were eight teams in the top 16, and those eight teams from the SEC in the top 16. So it's going to be a very tough road in the conference. And for Kentucky, it's going to be a tough start with going to Arkansas, and then you get Auburn at home, and it doesn't really ease up with an upstart Alabama team coming in a week after that.
This is a Kentucky team that must be playing with a lot of confidence off not only what it did last season, but what it's done so far this year.
No, absolutely. I mean, you look at them offensively, I think they're one of the best teams in the SEC, probably in the country right now with the way they're swinging the bats. Troy Squires at the top of the order was named SEC Player of the Week, and then he received some National Player of the Week awards. You still have the All-American and Tristan Pompey there. Right now they're hitting him in the three spot, and then you've got this stacked lineup behind them of guys that can really just demolish pitches over the wall with T.J. Collette. Cole Cottom's been having a great season again, and so, yeah, this is a stacked lineup from top to bottom. Luke Heyer's already won National Player of the Week and SEC Player of the Week honors. And then this pitching staff, it hurts this weekend not having Zach Thompson, who's out with injury, but you still got Justin Lewis, a vaunted bullpen, and like we've already mentioned, Jelly going tonight. So, yeah, this is a team playing with a lot of confidence right now.
Darren Hendrick on the call on the UK Sports Network. First pitch, 7:30 Eastern for Kentucky and Arkansas tonight. Thanks, Darren.
All right, thanks, Tom. Good luck to you.
Mike DeCourcy when we come back on the Leach Report.
This is where the Big Blue Nation gathers. It's Talk Radio 1080 and the Leach Report, followed by Kentucky Sports Radio.
We didn't have the energy. I don't know if the anxiety of playing and all the stuff zapped some guys, but we were kind of running in cement. Again, focusing on the things that we had done in the first half, I think they kind of thought we were just going to win the game. But this is a new experience for these guys. They haven't been through it.
Was John Calipari on our postgame interview on the UK Sports Network last night after Kentucky defeated Davidson to survive and advance. And Mike DeCourcy joins us now from SportingNews.com. You were in Pittsburgh for games, right, Mike?
Correct.
Did you get to see any of the Kentucky game?
I watched the entire thing.
Great.
It was fortuitous that Villanova was picking apart Radford at that point, as I suspected. I probably would have dumped the Kentucky game if that were a two-point game in the final 10 minutes, but it didn't turn out that way.
Well, then, did you see what John Calipari saw, what he talked about?
Yeah, I thought that they played the first half about as well as they could play. I thought they were locked in on almost every defensive possession, made very few defensive errors. I thought they were terrific. And then coming out at the start of the second half, I'm not sure exactly what the mentality was there, because what had gotten you to that point had been that attention to detail on every possession that you had to have against Davidson because of the way they play. They don't play like anybody else you've played, and they are dangerous at three-point shooters from positions that you're not always accustomed to seeing. Although the player who ended up hurting them was just a wing, so a guy you should have had better coverage of. But all in all, everything that they had done perfectly or near perfectly in the first 20 minutes was gone in the first five of the second half, and then they were in a battle for their lives. But the impressive thing, Tom, was that when they got in that battle for their lives, they never showed any fear. The kind of fear that or reticence that was obvious, I don't know if you or the listeners got to see Arizona, but Arizona was in the same kind of game in a lot of ways. They didn't play as well as Kentucky did for any period of that game. But they were kind of the same game. With 11, 12, 13 minutes left, they're right there. And then they start getting beat to loose balls and getting rebounds taken right out of their hands. Kentucky didn't do that. They started taking bad shots and playing iso ball, which isn't their game. Kentucky didn't do that. Kentucky stayed together with some really good offense. I thought Kevin Knox made an enormous number of huge shots. And I thought Shea kept his poise in terms of what he did from starting the attack. I was, in the end, I thought it was a really impressive performance because they had to withstand a really good basketball team that plays a really unusual style.
I've always thought that, and you've watched Cal for a long time, you can speak to this, that what he does so well is it's really starts with a very simple concept of honesty or being real, but he has no leverage over guys that come in thinking they're only going to be there 1 year. If you can't get them to buy into what you need them to buy into, then it's going to fracture on you at some point. And it almost never does here because these guys that he brings in do trust him completely, and so they give him what he needs, whether that's taking care of business in the classroom or being able to get connected out on the basketball court and to play together and to give themselves the best chance. They're not always going to win all the games, but they're going to have they're playing their best basketball usually in March, as this team is. And that's a lot easier said than done.
It is. One of the things I don't think that he gets enough credit for, or the program doesn't get enough credit for, is that because they're Kentucky, even if they lose out on the Zion Williamsons, what they are getting almost without exception, and Tom, you've dealt with these young men for almost 10 years now. I mean, almost without exception, they understand why they're there and what they can get out of it. And the meanness, it's about me. There may be moments when that happens on the floor, and I think sometimes that's as much a product of things aren't going well, I think I can fix this, as things aren't going well, I might as well get mine. But regardless of that, I mean, guys that other programs take because they're talented, John doesn't always take because they won't fit, because they won't understand what it means to play in this circumstance. They won't understand what it means to play for this program and how you can't be out there for you and be successful. And you can't be out there for you and not be found out by 5 million people like within the first three games. And so he's really good at finding guys who are going to go out there and try to play for Kentucky. And then, they all hope, and understandably so, that doing that will reflect future success on them. And I think we've seen from the results, not just in terms of what has happened at UK, but beyond, that it's a formula that works, and I don't think it's a formula that's appreciated enough. From those who don't have a problem with one and done, like me, I don't think that there are enough of us, certainly. But those who don't mind it, I don't think everybody understands why it works so well at Kentucky. And then, of course, the people who constantly assail the very mechanism don't stop and appreciate what the people, the young men who play for Kentucky, how they're doing it right, and how, you know, and how it's good for the game, and you know, it obviously is good for them in the future. I mean, DeMarcus and Anthony and Michael and all the rest, John, it's good for them, but it's also good for the game. You know, I was watching Alabama last night, and I saw them make some errors that I thought, you know, I thought, I wondered if part of the problem was, you know, that Avery Johnson's a terrific basketball coach, but he's used to taking elite players who are well-trained and teaching them advanced concepts so that they can defeat the best players in the world. And now he's taking players who are lightly trained, if at all, and trying to teach them how to play team basketball, winning basketball, at a very high level. And it's a different deal, and they don't always do it. And that's why they're, what, 20 and 15 now. You know, there's an art to that, to being able to take guys out of high school and turn them into, you know, near pros.
You said something there at the beginning. You said reference Cal, and then also the program, which I think is significant, because it is just more than him. It has to be a lot of people that these guys come in that they understand that people care about them, and that's sincere, and you saw, I think, that come out in the story that came out from, I think it was The Ringer, maybe, where they caught up to a bunch of the former Kentucky guys who were in the G League. And even a guy like Daniel Orton, for instance, who maybe didn't have the best exit from here, but to a man, they all just talked in glowing terms about their time at Kentucky. And that's more than just Cal, and they pass that on, and they talk to other guys, and that's why this continues to succeed at the level that it does.
Yeah, you know, one of the reasons why I talked just about the whole one-and-done thing was, you know, the Pac-12 came out with a report, a task force report, and I don't know everybody that was on the task force, some few former basketball people, some administrators, and I mean, it was ravagingly critical of the way the game is operated now, and in some ways it was a ludicrous report, because I mean, for instance, it said there shouldn't be any more AAU because shoe money has corrupted it. But we'll keep our shoe money. It's fine as long as we make sure we know that, you know, who's paying whom. We're okay with that.
And shoe money didn't corrupt us. It corrupted everybody else, though.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it doesn't corrupt them at all. It only corrupts the young people. I mean, I thought it was almost comical. But you know, they came back around and took another shot at one and done, and they basically said that basketball should be following college baseball's rules. And you know, my response to that is, first of all, you know, it suggests to me that they want a particular makeup of the teams, you know, in terms of, you know, of playing it that way. But it also said to me, like, wait a second, why would you want to be emulating college baseball? It's like the 100th most popular sport in America. Why do you want to be that? I mean, what you are doing here is popular and productive and a good experience for most of the young people who are in it, and you want to wreck it because the players aren't spending enough time on your campus, or because you're not like capturing them and keeping them on your campus. You know, it's all, you know, and answers like that are all about you. They're about, you know, you're creating solutions that only benefit you. And this, whatever solution, if you want to call it, if we really want to call it a problem, has to happen in college basketball. It has to be about the game and the players who play it, and the institutions, you know, that sponsor the game. You know, they're a factor in it, obviously. But they are part, you know, when I say it's got to be good for the game, I mean it's got to be good for the colleges and the NBA and the high schools. And it can't just be about what makes college basketball more convenient for us.
Talk with Mike DeCourcy at TSN Mike on Twitter, sportingnews.com on the web. Got to get to a break. We'll get back with one more segment after this timeout. It's the Leach Report from Boise. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can interact with the show via Twitter at Leach Report. Now, here's Tom.
Back with Mike DeCourcy, sportingnews.com, at TSN Mike on Twitter. Day two of the opening round of the NCAA tournament at four sites today. Anybody in particular that you would put on upset watch, Mike?
Oh, that's a great question. I will say that I did have Miami losing their game, and I thought that they were in trouble. It looked to me like that was a game that really was going to be problematic. I would say it's not really a huge upset, but I think Providence has a great shot at Texas A&M. That's one that I would really look at and say they better be ready to go. Charleston and Auburn, you know, I'm still not sure what Auburn is now,
right,
since the injury. I was really shocked. Obviously some of the steam went out of this last night, but it's still, you know, you still have the Wildcats there. I was really shocked that Virginia, as the number one overall seed, was put in a place with the, you know, with Kentucky and Arizona as their likely Sweet 16 opponent, while they put both Auburn and Clemson in 4-5 slots, I believe opposite Kansas. With both of those teams no longer really near what they were at one point, and both fading or failing down the stretch.
A couple of coaching hires in the SEC, Tom Crean to Georgia, Kermit Davis to Ole Miss. What do you think about those?
Well, you know, I, one of the things that's made SEC basketball, this revival, has been that they have hired excellent coaches all throughout the league. I mean, Rick Barnes coming into Tennessee, Ben Howland at Mississippi State. Obviously Mike White wasn't a big name, but it was a great hire by Florida, really prescient to make that hire. That one went against a lot of convention because Mike hadn't made the NCAA tournament, although Louisiana Tech had been outstanding. A lot of people stay away from that because they look at because all they look at is whether you've been in the tournament or not, and Florida was wise and didn't worry about that. You know, I think in these two hires, they've continued to deepen the coaching strength of the league. And, you know, I know that a lot of Kentucky fans enjoy laughing at Tom for whatever reason. But the reality is, I mean, Tom Crean had some success against Kentucky. I mean, he beat the great 2012 team, albeit on a home floor and all that. But not many people, a lot of people had a shot at that team and not many beat them. And then in 2016 that great second round game, was able to come out ahead in that one. He's a much better coach. There's probably a greater gulf between the perception of him as a coach and his actual coaching than almost anybody I've seen. He's a very good coach. With the resources and the talent base at Georgia, he's got a real shot. You know, Kermit's job is an uphill job because, you know, Ole Miss is not as that, you know, it's a wonderful university, but it's not as, I want to keep on saying physically powerful, but I think you know what I mean. So many of those other states command such large swaths of population and have such incredible brands. I mean, Alabama may not be a huge state, but its brand has grown so much. Ole Miss seems, you know, almost, even though it's a state school, it feels almost private in some ways. And so that's it's an uphill job for Kermit, but he's also a wonderful basketball coach. And honestly, if he wanted to move on, and in fact he's moving on now, suggests that he would have, it's shocking to me that it took this long.
Yeah, because there had to be other opportunities, too, along the way for the success that he's had at Middle. What do you think Louisville will or should do with their coaching job?
Well, I think that they're going to wait until some of this plays out, because obviously a lot of the candidates that they would want to hire, I think it's no secret that Chris Mack is someone that they will want to talk to. We don't know how long he's going to last. In fact, you know, the longer he lasts, you know, especially if he gets all the way to the final weekend, you know, the less likely it is that it happens. So, you know, I think from that standpoint, they're Louisville fans are going to have to be patient because it might take a little while before their candidate is ready to have any conversations about those sorts of things.
What does Kentucky need to do tomorrow to avoid becoming the second upset victim of the Buffalo Bulls?
Well, I think they need to play aggressively on the perimeter defensively, and that's something that Arizona wasn't really built to do. It's not really who they were as a defensive basketball team, as a basketball team in general. You're looking at a team that needs to be aggressive defensively. It needs to be really firm around the goal the way they were yesterday. That was really impressive. I mean, we all kind of had a little fun with the fact that the 3-point streak is dead now. But we're talking about, you know, their game plan was, let's throw this ball down and take it to the rim and score. And that's what they did. And so it worked out really well.
I always thought when the streak ended, it would be on like an 0-for-15 night. So when you only take six, it's not that great a shock that you could miss six of them and not keep the streak alive. Mike, thank you so much. Enjoy the games today. We'll talk next Friday.
Thanks, Tom.
That is Mike DeCourcy from SportingNews.com, his weekly visits to our show presented by our friends at B-Dry. As we get to our final segment after this time out, it's the Leach Report from Boise. Final segment of the Leach Report. We are served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. You can find them in Palomar, also in the Hamburg Center. Keeneland's coming soon, as is spring. And if you're looking to get your Keeneland day started off the right way, about breakfast or brunch at Wild Eggs, and when the weather gets nice, you can go out on the patio. It's locally owned and operated. Everything's made from scratch at Wild Eggs. Our Donato slice of Wildcat history. And this day in 2002, Tayshaun Prince tied the single-game scoring record for a Kentucky player in an NCAA tournament game. Got 41 out in St. Louis against Tulsa. Ironically, Jack Gibbons' 41-point game came in St. Louis as well. Happy birthdays to former UK sharpshooter Jim Master and a couple of former Kentucky football stars, punter Tim Mastey and All-American Howard Stellenberger, all celebrating birthdays today. Kentucky Buffalo tomorrow. We'll have the call on the UK Sports Network from here in Boise. It should be quite a fast-paced game. Buffalo's number 5 in the country in average length of possessions. Only 4 teams play faster than the Bulls.
Thanks.
Buckle up. Should be fun.
The Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow the Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it to leachreport@gmail.com. See you next time, right here on...